Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact. I have some of the bad boys with me. Simon Street, how are you?
You smell that?
Yes.
New day.
New day. King Lucky.
Hey, yo.
And Matt Michaels.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Why? You're so fucking serious. Why so serious?
All right, well.
Why are you so serious?
On our phone, we have a special guest from the Santino Brothers Wrestling Academy. He's the body guy. Vegas Bad Boy, welcome Vinny Wasco.
What's going on, guys? I'm happy to be here. Happy to be on. I've been looking forward to it since we set this up. What was it, almost a month ago, right?
Yeah. We get you in eventually, man. We get you in. Hey, you know
what?
You guys
have a busy schedule, I understand.
Yeah, man, it's been popping. So let me go ahead and start this off. Let everybody know, what makes you a body guy?
Well, I mean, what doesn't make me a body guy? I mean, I just have the looks. I mean, I'm currently a zaddy in training with Che Cabrera and Bad Dude Tito.
Straight up zaddy.
I straight up zaddy, yeah. I mean, I have probably some of... I look just completely jagged, juicy tan. I mean, I take the 110-pound dumbbells and I ride on the incline bench every single time when it's chest day, which was yesterday, actually. So, I mean, what doesn't make me a body guy?
Okay, all right. You know what? I will say this. There was one time, you know, I was watching some of your matches, and this guy was heckling you, talking about, oh, I'm a body guy. And you said, like, the coolest line ever. You was like, you know, what kind of guy are you? You are nobody guy. And I was like, man, I'm slick shit, man. So you have faced so many different people, man. I mean, you've had opportunity to face, you know, DKC, Watts, Darwin Finch, you know, Slice Boogie, where you teamed up with him and you faced him before, you know, Ray Rosas, you know, Jess Poole. What are some matches that you've faced thus far that just stand out in your mind that are just like, man, this is the match where I'd like to have more like this?
I mean, I think a match like that, what I want to have more of, would be the match with either Tyler Bateman or Ray Rosas. Mm. Those guys are not only just two guys I looked up to, they're two of my very good friends now, and it was just such an awesome time being able to get in the ring with them. And then even the match that I had with B-Boy, to me that was something special because that was like my third or fourth match, and I got to have it with the New Age Punisher B-Boy, who's a legend in, you know, Southern California, not just wrestling, like Southern California and wrestling itself. You know, he's a CZW Hall of Famer. He's wrestled numerous times in PWG, so being able to wrestle a guy like that on my third or fourth match was incredible, and I was just completely nervous going in there, and I mean, he took complete care of me, and he's amazing. I love him to death.
That's very, very apropos, you know, comment to give the love out, because he is definitely a legend. And you definitely have built your way up. I want to go back to a little something that is on the net with a little review of the Santino Brothers October 12, 2018 event review by SoCalUncensored.com. And they had, I can't believe this, you know, it's your first match. According to this, I believe this was Vinny Wasco's first match. And I quote, "He wasn't very spectacular. He mostly did a lot of basic offense and also had some pretty sloppy moments in the ring. With that said, this was his first match and he could improve over time. I really can't judge him as a performer based on this performance." That is the dumbest fucking review I've ever heard. So I mean, and you know, this is a contrast of things being said, because here you have them giving their expert opinion, and I say expert very lightly, with you being, you know, just starting out, and yet you got a really, really nice write-up at the same time from the local Kern area. I believe it's the, yeah, NorthKernNews.com. And one of the things that really captures, I think, the contrast here is, so there you got someone just criticizing you instead of going for the positives. You know, here are right. the negatives. And in this article, the beauty of it is how everyone in your family said, hey, you know what, we're not too sure about your dedication, about, you know, how you're going to make it in football or the wrestling team. And then all of a sudden you become the captain of the fucking wrestling team. You were captain of swim team. You were on the fucking student body. You were the class president. You know, all these other, you know, yearbook staff, multimedia club. You've done so much and you have a lot of determination and stuff. So I think that just goes to show that some of these assholes who write shit like that, they have no clue about heart and determination and what it takes to actually do what you're doing. How has this been something you've brought to your lifestyle, that heart and passion?
So just going back on that SoCal Uncensored review, actually, I watched that match so many times since that review came out. And the only slip up that I've seen in that match was when I slipped off the middle rope. And that right there was, I was actually very embarrassed when that happened. And then after the review came out, I was actually very happy and proud of that match. And then the review came out and I read it and it sucked. Like, you know, I was so upset about it for like a week or two. And, I was just like, man, like this, like, here's my, you know, I'm finally made my debut. This is something that I've been wanting to do since I was a kid. And the biggest column in, you know, Southern California is just basically kind of, it was whatever kind of deal. And I didn't expect it to be a five-star match, but just kind of the way they worded it, you know, it was just kind of like, all right, well, that kind of sucked. You know, that's not what I wanted to read for my first match. And ever since that read, too, I've done everything I could to where, every time I have a match in SoCal to where I know they'll probably see it, I try and just be better than the last match before me, better than my last match in SoCal, and even all my matches, because I don't want them to have another review of me like that on their website. I want it to be, well, Vinny Wasca's improved since the last time we've seen him and all that stuff. So it actually, that column has actually made me determined to be better than I was last time for that instance in itself. So I kind of thank SoCal and Simpson for that right there.
the motivation.
But yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it was kind of like a backhanded motivation slap in the face, I guess, in a weird way. But, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like I said, for the first week or two, it kind of like, it was just the back of my head, like, literally all day. And after a while, I just, like, whatever. Like, it was my first match, and I've had way better matches since then. And even then, it was still a very good first match, in my opinion.
Right.
Maybe I'm being a little biased. I don't know.
Well, no, you know what? And there's a couple interesting things about this. Number one, on the website, they don't use last names of the quote-unquote journalists who are reviewing this shit. So if you want to react, you know, like, have some balls and fucking put your name to it. Number two, what makes you a fucking, you know, expert to be able to review matches? You know, who is this person and what have they done? You know, that's the thing that really pisses me off when I see this is, you know, you have some people who, instead of, they're just pointing out the obvious and also burying you without totally saying it. And
exactly.
And that's nothing to do to anyone who's just starting out, because you realize in the article it even says this person is just starting out. So that's the dumbest fucking bitch move you can make, is to, you know, just basically say, hey, this person's new, And I wasn't impressed. It's like, well, go fuck yourself. It was their first match, man. So I love that you've got the motivation and determination. When you started training, was it an upward battle? Or because of your athletic background, did you find yourself being able to pick up things a little quicker?
So I would say as far as like the, I guess as far as being in the ring and working out and all that, yeah, it wasn't easy, but it was a little bit easier because, I mean, there's when I was in high school cutting weight for wrestling, I mean, there was days where I literally cut 13 pounds in one day for a wrestling game. And nothing, you know, nothing gets harder than cutting weight. So, I mean, doing, you know, 200 squats, I was like, man, hey, at least I could get to go home and eat tonight. You know, like it was stuff like that. I was like, I've done this plenty of times, you know. And, of course, it still was hard because it had been a while since I worked out at that capacity and that high intensity. Because I think it was over a year since I graduated high school that I started training. And I'd only been doing, just working out in the gym and doing, you know, cardio sets inside the gym. So, when you do that's a different workout than doing calisthenics on, you know, a time set for like 300 squats or 200 push-ups, stuff like that. You know what I mean? It's a lot different than going to the gym and bench pressing six to 10 times, you know? Mm-hmm. So in that, getting my body used to that was, back being used to that was, it was a little step, but the hardest part, for me was, just to drive actually. Cause I live in, Wasco, which is, the Bakersfield area. Right. And I drive to LA 3 times a week to go train. And so it was about a 3-hour drive one way just to get to the Santino Bros Dojo.
Yeah.
And that in itself was like the hardest part because you do that drive over and over and over again and it just gets old really quick. Yeah. You know, and doing it by yourself too, it was even worse. So that was to me the hardest part was just the drive. But I mean, once the first week was obviously kind of harder because again, that's something that my body was never used to, running the ropes, taking bumps and all that. So that was new. But the calisthenics, it was very similar to what I'd grown up doing.
So definitely, you know, kind of looking at your career thus far, do you find yourself thinking about, you know, in the beginning when you first started to now, you know, what are some, you know, significant changes or subtle changes that you know, Vinny Wasco has actually undergone that, you know, maybe some people who have seen your career grow would be able to say, hey, you know, he's grown in this area or he's grown in that area?
Man, that's a good question. I mean, I think we all grow as performers every time we step in the ring because I always, if I'm not doing something new and doing a different new move in a match, then I want to always try and do something new. Mm-hmm. Even if it's the most smallest move, if it's new, I want to try it because I want to be great at every move that you can possibly be great at. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying I'm the best wrestler out there or the best performer, but I want to be able to improve every time I step in the ring. So I feel like there are some things that I have improved on. And it's funny because now that I think about it, one move that I know for a fact that I have just one move off the top of my head. If for anybody who watches my matches, I do a springboard crossbody from the middle rope. Mm-hmm. And the first time I did it, I have footage of it on my phone. It's not up online anywhere quite yet, but I was wrestling at FSW with Hiro Lu. And the first time I did it, you can just see me just kind of turn my body and just go for it. Whereas now if you see me do it when I wrestled against Watts or on Hollywood, I think is the most recent one, mm-hmm. I jump up and actually get very good height on it. And the first time I did it against Hiro, I just kind of like turned and hopped out towards him, you know, and now I'm actually getting as much height as I can jumping off that middle rope. So I guess that's somewhere one move off the top of my head that I have improved on a lot, and I'm happy with that one.
And you know, that's kind of interesting that you say that, is because, you know, oftentimes, you know, most people in the ring won't actually go in, you know, try to perfect those moves. Or if they do, they don't really explain it like you just did. You know, being able to get that extra height and kind of showcase that move a little bit better, you know, add a little bit more pizzazz to it. So that way, you know, people are seeing it. So when you were talking about that move, did you have that mindset in mind of not only just doing or executing that move a lot better, but did you also have in mind of just showcasing it a lot better as well? to where it just, you know, better attribute for yourself.
Right. Of course. I mean, that move where I came up with the idea was, I mean, Rey Mysterio was one of the biggest names and still is today when I was growing up watching wrestling. I mean, I remember I was like second or third grade when he won the World Heavyweight Championship. And the move I specifically remember him doing most, besides the 619, he would always do a springboard crossbody from the middle rope. And yeah. I loved how he always just got that perfect extension and perfect mm-hmm. height on it. And I mean, he could literally just, his whole chest was out in the open as he was flying through the air. And I've always been like, man, I want to do not if something similar, not if, even if it's the same move, something just like that, you know, and being able to go from just kind of getting my neck turned and, you know, doing that to where I'm almost at that, you know, kind of level where I can be kind of like Ray, where I'm extending my whole body and getting that height up. It's kind of like good to like go back and watch it. And I just, like I said, I just recently watched that match with Hero. It's from April. Mm-hmm. And in just this short time, it was the night that the FSW and LA Lucha were doing the two-night tournament. That was the end of April. So about 2 months, you know, they've been able to always improve on it little and little by each match. And it's one of my favorite moves to do. It's like, I love just being able to just fly and just see how high I can get. And sometimes when I do it, I'm like, man, I got literally, there'll be times where I'm doing the move and after I jump, I'm like, oh, I got pretty high on this one today. Let's see where I can get the next time I do it. You know, and it's something that I want to perfect each time I do it.
So let me ask you this. You train at probably one of the best wrestling schools out there, and I know you're definitely influenced by Joey Chaos. What have you learned the most from him?
Man, there's just so much that I've learned from Chaos. And if there's one thing that I always have to remind myself is what he tells us. If you're not having fun, then you're not doing it right. he preaches that a lot, that and put in the work, you know. And wrestling's a grind, you know. And I remember growing up here, I always wrestled, you know. And even today, you hold wrestling. You know, like, there's times where you're just in a down, and I'm not gonna lie. Sometimes I get like that, you know, where I'm in this just mood where it's like, oh, wrestling, you know. And then I always just every time I get in that mood, I hear Chaos just tell me like, if you're not having fun, then you're not doing it right. So I'm like, okay. Well, what was fun about this past wrestling match or trip, you know, the weekend that I had? And I'm like, all right, yeah, you know what? I'm having fun. I'm not going into these shows just like, oh, I don't want to be here. So I'm always having fun with it. And that's something that's always stuck with me. And then, of course, put in the work. We have that on our wall in the dojo. And, I mean, that's, like, embedded in, I think, in all of us, you know, is that you have to be we always say, like, not every – Santino Tough is one of the things that we live by, and it's a different mindset to be Santino Tough, I guess. And put in the work, and if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. And just all the little stuff in between that he's just taught me. Like, I've been blessed to have him in my life, along with all the other guys who trained me, such as Robbie Phoenix. Jake Atlas had a very big role in training me in my very beginning, like my first 2 or 3 months. Eli Everfly was one of my trainers, and Tyler Bateman was there towards the end. And I've been very blessed to have all those guys have a hand in my training, and then everybody thereafter who I've been able to jump in a car with and just talk wrestling with, such as Douglas James, Andy Brown, you know, guys like that who, you know, they're just amazing wrestlers. And being able to pick and choose, you know, their brain and choose what they say and take it with you, it's something that I love that I can do.
Yeah, and the other thing is you got a chance to go over to Japan and train out there at the dojo there. How was that?
I've never been to Japan.
Oh, really?
Oh, the New Japan Dojo.
Yeah, the New Japan Dojo.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I thought you meant actual Japan.
actual Japan as well.
Yeah.
I was like
New
Japan
Dojo in California.
Yeah. Sorry about that one.
That's okay.
that was fun. That was incredible being at that dojo. They just did a camp, I think, back in May, and I wasn't able to do that one. And they were gearing up. I think they're gearing up for another one. But the Rocky seminar, like, they announced that, I think, like 2 weeks before it happened. And so just being there at the dojo was something special. I mean, it's set up like an old school dojo. And I mean, I don't really know how to describe it without, there's just really no words to describe it. Like, everybody's asked me, what was it like being there? I'm like, there's no words to describe it. It's something that you have to see for yourself. And Rocky was awesome. He taught us, just very not basic stuff, but just more of the psychology behind some of the moves. Like we just were doing lockups and you know, circling your opponent. He was teaching us like the psychology behind all that, and then we learned some of the how the New Japan Dojo, you know, some of their warm ups, and if you wanted to do a camp, you know, here's what to expect. So that was so being able to do that and know that I want to do a camp here in the near future, having that in the back of my mind, knowing, hey, this is what they're going to have us do when I get here, it's something good to have because now I can prepare for that mentally and physically, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Another question I got for you. There's not too many people that can pull off the blonde hairdo, and you are pulling it off right now, my friend. Is that Chaos inspired or Tito Ortiz inspired?
It's more Chaos inspired. You know, one day last summer when I was still training, I was like, you know what? I want to bleach my hair. And I bleached it, and it kind of came out orange. You know, every time I bleach my hair, it always comes out orange. So I had to bleach it twice, and it usually takes about 2 hours to bleach the hair. And I went to training with it, and Chaos was just like, man, that looks great. You know, you have to keep it. And ever since then, I've kept it. So, yeah, I've had blonde hair now for over a year. And, I mean, it's not even something that's the first time that I've done another. When I was in high school, we would always bleach our hair whenever we had, like, whether it was the postseason for wrestling or playoffs for football coming up, we'd always bleach our hair. So I was just like, man, you know what? I want to bleach my hair just like I did in high school. And I've kept it now for over a year. And everybody tells me I need to stop because I'm going to burn my scalp or, you know, ruin my head. And I'm like, I don't care. It's going to happen. It's going to happen one day. Might as well happen now, right?
Right.
Well, you know, the question I have for you, you know, kind of looking at, you know, your YouTube channel, you do a lot of vlogging. Is that something that you're looking to kind of further develop? Because I got to be honest with you, I mean, I do watch a lot of YouTube, and I see people who do vlog, and I'm really quick to hit the pass button. But you know, I have to honestly say, you actually have the personality for it. Is that something you're looking to develop down the road in addition to your wrestling career?
So it's kind of been like a, what year are we on, 2019? So it's kind of been like a 4 or 5 year development. So mm-hmm. when I was in high school, in the small town I'm from, there's not a lot of wrestling fans. Mm-hmm. I was kind of a one-man wrestling fan. I think we have wrestling fans here. They're kind of casual. Nobody was really into it as much as I was. And I just remember going on YouTube, and I was seeing these guys just talking about wrestling. And they talked about, not only did they talk about wrestling, but they had friends from around the world that they would, you know, have friends just to talk about wrestling with. And it kind of was like, man, that'd be cool to have friends like that as well. So that's how I actually started my YouTube channel, was I, as a guy who would go on there and talk about wrestling, you know, just, I would vlog going to shows, and I would talk about the most recent pay-per-view or whatever the case may be. And I was able to make friends with it. And, that's how I got my 2,000 subscribers off that, was from doing the YouTube. And it was something that vlogging was always fun to me, just to be able to do. And that's how I kind of wanted to continue over with wrestling. And just, it's always something too that I want to have, just to kind of like look back on too, and you know, in a few years, because I don't know how long I'm gonna be wrestling, you know, 5 years from now I decide that I don't want to do it no more, it's still something I want to have to look back and be like, man, look at this trip that I had with Doug or whoever was in the car with me, you know. Mm-hmm. And because of YouTube, I actually found Santino Brothers, because Lucas Riley was one of the guys I used to do YouTube with, and he actually went to Santino Brothers, and that's how I was able to go to Santino Brothers, because of, so I'm grateful for YouTube and Lucas Riley.
And I'm assuming that through the YouTube station, that's how you got the people you knew in Japan to get you to fly over to Japan. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%.
Fly over to the New Japan Dojo.
Yep. I flew out of the Bakersfield Airport right into LAX.
You're a big toy collector. What line of toys are you into the most?
So obviously, I've always been into wrestling toys. I remember growing up, always needing the new toy that came out to have for my storyline, my matches, whatever the case may be. I needed, even if I had this, even if I was this, you know, I had the John Cena. John Cena's outfit is not going to change for whatever figure he has, right? Yeah. The only thing that's going to change are his wristband colors, but I needed to have that new one because, well, it's a new outfit, you know what I mean? It could be a WrestleMania gear. I need that one. So wrestling figures have always been the biggest ones for me. As of lately, just wrestling-wise, the classic superstars from the Jack Specific line,
yeah.
Right before they switched over to Mattel, those are the ones that I guess I'm attracted to most, that I like to collect out of wrestling. And of course, Pops, man, those things. I don't know if you guys collect Pops, but those things are just terrible because they make a pop for everything.
Yep.
So you have to buy every single one.
Yeah, it and sucks.
I'm trying to avoid that.
Like, that's a rabbit hole I don't want to go down yet.
Yeah, if you can avoid it because for the longest time, I was like, I don't need Pops. Like, they have some cool things, but I really don't need them. And then as a gift, somebody got me a Pop, and I'm like, wow, this is actually pretty cool. Let me get the whole set. And then I was like, oh, well, they make wrestling. Well, they make Star Wars. Oh, wow, they have the Step Brothers movie. Oh, they got Space Jam, you know? So now it's like, if they have everything. And I remember one day when I found out they had the Space Jam Pops, I literally bought the whole set in one day, and it was like $150. Yep. And I'm like, what am I doing with my life? You know, I'm over here buying Pops that I don't need.
It's funny you say that because, you know, with me, again, I truly go out of the way to avoid it. But I foresee that probably in the next year, it's not going to be that way. But someone bought me a Pop, and I was looking at the thing like, what the hell is this? And I open it up, and it's a C-3PO Pop, and I'm like, oh, man. And so, you know, I'm a big gamer, so I go to GameStop. And so GameStop sells them all the time. So then I'd find myself buying a game and then buying a Pop. And I don't have a crazy no collection. But again, I know eventually it's on my radar. And, you know, I'm going to have to go back and thank the person that bought me that gift.
Well, our guy, Sin City Steve, he's not with us tonight, but he is addicted. He's got maybe, I don't know, upwards of 100 to 200 of them. And every time a new one comes out, he's on my line about, you know. And I'm like, dude, I can't. If I buy one, then it's a wrap. Because every time I go to 7-Eleven that's close by my house, they have a Sasha Banks and an Iron Sheik, and it has not moved. I'm like, man, I know.
Don't tell me about no Sasha Banks,
bro. Yeah, I'm like, Jesus. But you know what? I'm like you. I collect in my closet. Thankfully, my girl allows it. But I've got so many WWE figures, but I do like the Mattel ones versus the Jacks. Like, the Jacks were kind of maybe a little over the top. I wish I could really get my hands on some LJNs from back in the days, but they just want so much money for those now.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I've looked on eBay at, like, the Hasbros and the LJNs, and it's ridiculous how much they're asking for. And there's in Vegas, there's a toy store right there on Fremont. I think it's called the Fremont Toy Experience. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That one, they had a Macho Man, LJ, I think it was an LJN, in the package, and it was like $180. And I'm like, oh, man, I was like, if I had the money, I know I would buy it. But it's just, I don't know how to explain coming home with an $180 LJN Macho Man.
Right,
you know
what I mean? Dude, totally.
I got a feeling that might have been a Hasbro one. Because the LJN, if it was an in-package Macho Man,
you're right. It was a Hasbro.
Yeah, it probably would have went for way more.
Yeah, it would have won $500.
Yeah, the LJN
plus.
Pack. Yeah, I always get the two mixed up because those are still kind of before my time. And even though, and like I always get them mixed up. And I'm like, oh, let me get LJNs. And I look at the LJN, I'm like, oh wait, no, I meant the Hasbros. You know,
yeah.
It's like I always get those two mixed up.
Yeah, I had every single LJN there was. I had JYD, Hogan, Andre, I had them all. And then, you know, like they would rip at the arms, and all the joints would like rip the first, that would be the first part that goes. But now all the figures that I buy, I keep those in boxes.
Yeah, I regret opening all the toys that I did when I was younger, because I just look at them and I'm like, man, I cannot believe it. It's like for example, I think Ringside Collectibles,
Yes.
They always have Ringside exclusives. They have some of the sickest exclusive toys that they ever come out.
Yeah.
And one year they did a Cactus Jack, and that thing goes for like $70 or $80 on eBay.
Wow.
And I remember, and it could be even more too. And I think that's like the cheapest I've ever found it. And I get mad at myself because I got that for Christmas one year, and what did I do? I opened it because I didn't have a Cactus Jack.
Oh. You know,
I used the Cactus Jack, so I'm like, man, it's like, I can't believe myself sometimes. All the toys that I've had, it's just like, if I just was a strong, 6-year-old boy and didn't open them, I would have, whenever I needed it.
Yeah, and I get sucked in too when I go to LV Fight Shop because they have a pretty big collection there as well too, of all like some rare stuff that you may have that you've never seen.
Yeah, I get lost in that. I've been there once or twice, and every time I'm there, I'm in there for like an hour, just circling the whole store. Like, man, this is incredible. This is amazing. Like, I'm very into collecting. Stuff. So when I see a store like that, I can just get lost in for hours, just looking. You know what I mean? And just like, oh man, like what can I do with this? Like where can I hang that up? And then it's like, oh well, if I get that, then I need to get this. You know, it's like it's crazy.
Do you have you ever gone down to Frank and Sons?
No, I haven't. And everybody always tells me you need to go down there. I'm like, I know, but they're only open like on like Saturdays.
Yeah.
Right? So. That's the one. So I've been telling myself, if I have a Saturday that's free coming up in the next month or so, I'm going to go down there. So I think I think August, I have like a Saturday open, so I'm going to make the drive down there and go check it out.
It's a shame you can't get down there this Saturday or next Saturday, July 27th, because from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., appearing there, none other than Big Cass and Enzo.
Oh man!
Oh wow! Oh, wow.
How you doing?
You should go up there and get in a fight with Enzo. I hear he's itching to fight anybody these days.
Is that so? I saw the brief altercation on Twitter
with Janello.
Yeah,
Janello been to hell and back. He'll kill Enzo.
Who was your favorite wrestler growing up?
Growing up, like, more than anybody was probably John Cena. I mean, he was, like, the guy growing up. I remember my first favorite wrestler was Hulk Hogan, which is crazy because, I mean, he was long gone by the time I was, by the time I got real into wrestling.
Yeah.
But I think the reason being that it was Hulk Hogan for the first few months I got real into was my parents actually took me to WrestleMania 21 down in L.A.
Yeah, dude, I was there.
So, yeah, and that was like an awesome mania, like from top to bottom. That was what a lot of people don't talk about. I love that WrestleMania to death.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And obviously that was the weekend he got inducted into the Hall of Fame, and then like the next month he came back for Backlash. And so I think just all the hype around him, it kind of made me like intrigued towards Hulkamania. And then once all of it kind of wore down again, then it was John Cena for the longest time. But I think looking back more so as a Kurt Angle or The Undertaker. Those are the two guys that I've like, just, man, those guys are awesome.
Yeah, without question. And Cena, he's known for his entrances. They're very elaborate. Do you have a favorite one that he's had?
From WrestleMania or just from...
WrestleMania.
Let me see.
For me, it was the Detroit one where he came out.
Tommy Gunn was Chicago.
No,
Chicago.
It was the Mustang. And
I'm not a Cena fan, but
yeah, I'm a Cena fan. I'll admit it.
I'm the only person in the room always, but I have respect for him for everything he's done.
Yeah, I went to 31 and had the Cena gear on, and everybody was like, "F Cena" and all this. I was like, "Damn, he's pretty hostile."
Wow,
that was in San Francisco.
Damn.
Yeah, I was there for that one too, and I don't remember. I for the life of me, I can't remember his entrance that night. I can't remember anything past 28.
What was his intro?
What was the one that where he had like pretty much everybody dressed like him?
No, that wasn't 31. 31, he fought Rusev, which I thought Rusev should have went over that night.
Oh,
Rusev had the huge tank
with the tank. That was OG.
Yeah, Rusev had the huge tank. I remember. Yeah. I think that night he just had like aired video or something, didn't he?
Yeah.
I think that's why. I think he just had a kind of like nothing too spectacular, so to say, as to what he usually had. I think it was just a little pre-aired promo that they put together for him.
He probably came out and then pointed to the crowd on stage left, pointed to the crowd on stage right, and then stood middle stage and put his hand over his face like you can't see him. And then he runs down to the ring. That's, I think, the entrance.
Sure. You think he did that?
That sounds familiar. That sounds familiar now that you say that.
Vinny, let me ask you this, too, because Michaels believes that it was the right call for Baron Corbin to go over on Kurt Angle in his last match. Were you upset with that, or were you good with the way that went down?
I mean, I don't get too emotionally invested in the storylines these days. I just try and watch for the wrestling.
Yeah.
I wish Kurt would have won his last match, but I mean, from the wrestler's standpoint, I understand, you know, like, all the wrestlers kind of, you know what I mean? Like, Shawn lost his last one.
Yeah.
Rick, quote-unquote, lost his quote-unquote last one, you know?
But
so I understand why he...
Well, at the same time, Vinny, even in that show, Batista, who retired, lost his fucking match. So, lucky suck it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you, Vinny.
Yeah, he agreed with you.
Do you think, along those lines, then, do you think Taker's streak should have ever been broken?
So, from a fan standpoint, no. I remember watching it. I think that was my sophomore year in high school, and I was mad. I was pissed.
Yeah.
I was extremely upset. I thought at that point, I just remember like if they were gonna have break the streak, it should have been, you know, CM Punk or somebody who,
or Bray Wyatt, somebody that needed that rub.
Yeah, of course. I just remember being mad that it was Brock. I was like, to me, I was like, man, that. I was upset about it, to say the least. You know.
So let me ask you this question with regards to that, because I thought about this as well. What if we went back in time, and in instead of Brock breaking the streak, it was a break the streak and end a career? Would that have made more sense because of Brock's dominance versus if it had been, yeah? And I'm a CM Punk guy, but I'll be honest with you, I wasn't too enthused with Taker and CM Punk, but a lot of that was because of the buildup. You know, my point that I'm trying to make is Brock is pretty goddamn dominating. It just is what it is. But because it was a streak and it wasn't like a career ending, it was kind of like, okay, well, damn. Like, okay, you're going to take away a huge accolade that nobody is even come close to.
Yeah.
And so what's left for The Undertaker just to, you know, he hadn't even had a title. Title run or anything. So it's just, okay, all he had was a streak and we was cool with that. You know what I mean? Do you get what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah. If it would have been a career on the line match, I think it would have made a little bit more sense if the streak would have been broken that night.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the career was on the line, I think I still would have wished it would have been someone other than Brock at the time. But yeah, so the way it kind of played out with itself, one of the mysteries of pro wrestling, you know?
Well, let me ask you this then. Since you know, have been now in the business itself, and you know how sometimes booking goes and stories go, but especially this end of it, you said that you were pissed off.
Yes.
So, did they not do their job by putting the heat on Lesnar?
They did a fantastic job by doing that. I will give them that. That's you're the first person to put that in perspective for me. I've never nobody's ever said it like that. So I will say, yeah, they did a good job at that.
Well, there we go, boys.
Now since you
he's not used to someone immediately agreeing with him. So, you know, we thank you for showing us that other side of maybe we should start agreeing with Michaels. It shuts him up quicker.
Vinny, Vinny, you've got one match to book against anybody in the business right now. Who do you want to face?
Currently wrestling, right?
Yep.
Does The Undertaker count?
Yeah, that works.
Yeah.
You're going Taker.
What's that?
Yeah, so you're going Taker, huh?
Since he's quote-unquote currently wrestling, then yeah, I'd go Taker. I mean, if we're talking extremely active, you know, they're week in, week out, I'd probably say I can't choose between the two, so I'd say either Daniel Bryan or Johnny Gargano. But I think all in all, probably Undertaker.
You know, Slice was on the show. Slice Boogie was on the show not too long ago. And he said that he wanted his match to be Taker as well, too. You know, and it's just Taker has got that mystique. Boogie said that he would actually be shook because he'd be in there wrestling his idol. Do you think you'd feel the same way?
100%. Yeah. He's the reason why I even started watching professional wrestling.
Wow.
When did you start watching, and what is your first memories of The Undertaker?
So, my dad says I was watching well before the earliest memory that I have, because my family has always called me Scotty Too Hottie since I was like, toddler,
before the blonde hair.
Yeah, before the blonde hair, because I would always put on, you know, sunglasses and try to do the womb, I guess.
Uh-huh.
But my earliest memory, I was probably like 4 years old. And I remember me and my dad were just sitting on the couch and we were flipping through the channels, and it was Undertaker versus Rey Mysterio on like an episode of SmackDown. And that's the earliest memory that I have. And ever since then, I just remember being hooked on it. And the only reason my dad stopped was because The Undertaker was on it, and I mean, my dad grew up on The Undertaker, you know, so that's why he stopped. And that's the earliest memory that I have from professional wrestling. That's how I always say Undertaker and Rey Mysterio, the guys that got me to start watching.
So, Vinny, you know, I'm also a Taker fan. That's my dude. But I will say, if there's anybody in the business, okay, right now, that would be as close or has potential to have some of the mystique of The Undertaker, who would you say has a possibility?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of guys off the top of my head.
Just off the top of your head.
I'd say Aleister Black, probably.
Mm-hmm. Very good choice.
Just from like, some of the stuff that I like, I see some of his promos, that, you know, like the Dark Room and stuff like that. That's that was the first guy that came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So probably him, I'd probably say.
I would say definitely Aleister Black is up there on my list. I was also going to say a little bit of Bray Wyatt.
He was another guy that came to my mind too.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't know. You know, I'm like, it could be.
Well, I could see The Undertaker doing a Firefly Funhouse.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was saying more Bray Wyatt, you know, with the Wyatt family, Bray Wyatt, not in the capacity of this. Not that I have a problem with the new Bray Wyatt, you know, that we got right now. But definitely, man.
I 100% agree with you on that. If it's a little Wyatt family, Bray Wyatt. Yeah, of course.
A little bit darker.
Speaking of characters, Slice Boogie or Jerry Gigolo, which one is more intense in the ring?
Time out. He said Jerry. How can you compare anybody else to Jerry Gigolo?
This is true.
Like how?
But Slice Boogie's out there too.
I get it, but it's hard. Shit.
See, we got to put up with.
Oh man,
I'm sorry, bro. I was just like, man, Jerry. After Jerry Gigolo, I had to get a drink.
I'll tell you, we did a pre-show.
you know what? Before you even say that,
go ahead.
Please, next time you run into Slice, go ahead, Vinny, and tell Slice that King Lucky compared him to Jerry Gigolo, and let's just see.
I said, who's more intense now?
Let's just see if King Lucky lasts.
Slice, I tell you what, I will book that ass whooping if it comes to pass.
Listen, man, let me tell you something.
They have taken Jerry's ass whoopings. They are they're not fun, you know. Like, I mean, he slapped my ass. Jeez, like,
see, that's intensity, right?
You know, like when he was. I remember when he was slapping my ass. I'm like, man, kind of like almost unmoved to it, you know?
Yeah, that's verbal abuse or that's physical abuse. And Slice Boogie's got that verbal abuse, man. That New York just grittiness.
Yeah, he is pretty aggressive.
You know, I will say this about Slice. I don't know if he told you guys this or if he's ever told anybody, but the one time that we wrestled, he made some comment to me, and I saw it right, went back at him, and he told me, he goes, you're the only guy that's ever made me just shut up in the ring, and I'm
really?
I took that to my grave.
Dude, wow. That's legit.
I can see that with you, man, because you're really quick with the quid per quo. Well, like I've seen you, like, real quick on the drop.
We're not doing our job if we don't ask, what did you shoot back at him?
This is true.
You know what? I think he told me, where have you been eating all this whole weekend? Twinkies? And I think I told him, like, oh, that's what your mom was serving for breakfast this morning.
That's a good one.
He be saying some wild shit in the ring, though, because I be hearing him say, like, shut the fuck up, motherfucker. I'm like, god damn. I was like, you rough as hell.
Yeah, like, he said something, and, like, the funny thing was, I was, like, going into that match more nervous about him just verbally abusing me more than he was going to hurt me in the ring. I'm like, man, he's going to just say some stuff that I, like, that's going to hurt more than, you know what I mean? It's going to be, the words may never hurt me. No, these words are going to hurt me, not the moves itself, you know? Like, I was just, and, like, he told me, like, you got me to shut up. I was like, that's all I needed to know. I won the battle then.
Well, you know what you need it to do, and you can even do this, find out exactly if he remembers what you said, or try to rack your brain, and then you got to create a T-shirt.
Oh man, that's money.
I think I am. I know it's on. If you guys watch back, I know it because it's the only match we've had, so it's up on the YouTube. If you guys watch it, you can see it. And once he told me that, I went back and I watched it. You can just see him like, all right, let's lock up, motherfucker. Like, he legit tells me that. Like, let's lock up, motherfucker.
So maybe that was the part because yeah, no. I'm glad you said that. I'm going to look it up. Not now, but I'm going to look it up. Yeah, I'm going to definitely look it up.
Yeah, it was like right in the, it was the beginning of the match. Like when he got me, he was just like, let's walk up, motherfucker. And I'm like, all right, Boogie doesn't want to talk shit no more today, I guess. You know?
So as we get close to the end of our interview, these guys have been gracious enough to allow me week in and week out to have my own segment. Usually around this time, I will expand long period and be very long-winded until Matt Michaels gives me the cue of shut the fuck up, rolls his eyes. So I'm going to go ahead and sell it for you. The name of this segment is the Oh Shit segment. Basically, it's an opportunity for our guests to be able to share a story with us and with the people listening, a time that either inside the ring, outside of the ring, where you have experienced something so shocking, so alarming, that it only left you with the words of, oh shit.
Man.
Vinny Wasco, will you please share with us your story for the oh shit moment?
That's like, give me a minute and think about that one. There's a few that come to mind where I'm like, and it's more of like, did that just happen? I don't think it's more of like, oh shit. It's like, is that happening? I think one that comes to mind, I almost shit my pants when I was training one time, when I was like, early on in my training.
Let's go with that.
That one, and it wasn't even nothing big. I just remember I was having like some stomach issues all week, and I just remember like I took, I think it was like a hip toss, and like I farted and I thought shit came out, and I just remember I told Robbie, I was like, hey, bro, I got to go to the bathroom real quick. And I ran to the bathroom and, like, checked to see if I shit my pants. Thankfully, I didn't. I just came back and I told him, like, hey, I thought I shit my pants, but I didn't. So we're all good here, guys.
Now, the big question is, if you would have shit your pants, would you have told them?
I mean, it depends on how bad the shit was. You know what I mean?
Could it be cleaned up? That,
if I could clean it up, you know what I mean? I think like, why, you know, be one of those things, just, you know, shove it under the rug, you know, deal. But if it was like pretty major, I was like, I'd probably have to be like, damn, I think I need to go home, guys. It's gonna be a long car ride home, just, you know, 3 hours sitting
smelling
in my car.
Your own shit. Yeah. Damn. Well, thank you so much, man, for sharing that oh shit moment. Literally, oh shit. And now I'm gonna go ahead and take it over to the master of all board ceremonies.
That'd be me. Hey, Vinny, tell us your social media sites that we can check in on.
Yeah, so you guys can find me on Facebook, just Vinny Wasco. Instagram and Twitter are at Vinny Wasco. And then if you guys would like to subscribe to the YouTube channel, it's just Vinny Wasco. Again, pretty simple and easy to find, I guess, if you're looking for me. Numbers, no underscores or nothing like that. It's just all one word and centered on Facebook and YouTube. It's spacing in between my name.
Well, there you have it. Thanks, man, for chatting with us tonight.
Definitely, man.
Oh, thank you, guys. This is a lot of fun. I'm glad that we got to do this.
No doubt, man. Everyone, Vinny Wasco. We
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
No doubt.
Vegas.
That voice
of podcasting. Holding you down since day one. January 2019.
The podcast in the universe.
There's like 1,000 podcasts.
Vegas Bad Boys Day One. Say
different.
Thoughts.
Outrageous.
Interview.
Exciting.
Interesting.
Intriguing.
Amazing.
Funny. Intergalactic.
Bad Boys.
If you haven't listened to all of our podcasts, take a listen of what you might have missed. JTG.
Shad and I. Shad was the big guy. Is it the same size? One is a little bit fatter, right?
Yeah.
One is cut. Yeah. One is kind of like pudgy.
Yeah, that's Angelo. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of similar to me, Shad. Yeah, I'm kind of like the...
Ow, Snow.
Well, yeah, I did. I actually wrote a book. I also, just so you guys know, I do magic for the blind.
Wow.
It's my way of giving back to the community, you know, let me tell you, it's like, is this your card? And it's like, I don't know. And you're like, it is. Ta-da. Like, oh my God,
Jeff Cobb.
You know, I don't plan to wrestle into my late 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s. Like, you know, but, you know, again, I say that now, but.
Right.
it's like the weirdest addiction ever, you know? Like,
yeah, we know. B. Brian Blair.
All of a sudden, I look in the mirror, and Terry's, you know, spanking his Woody on top of the back of Coco's ass.
Oh.
With his pants ripped, and I'm going, oh my gosh, man, we're going to prison.
Vicky Guerrero.
You know, you are definitely, in our minds, a Hall of Famer. Because
I'll give you $5 later, guys.
Theo Landers.
How do you guys do this? Are you guys in like a recording studio, or are you guys in a home studio?
Hey, you don't contact WWE Creative and ask them how they write Raw, do you?
We're
all in a bathroom.
We're in a
right
bathroom.
Now.
Yeah, we're in a bathhouse. Right, we're
in
all
a bathtub.
We're
you're
all
in a bathhouse.
RVD.
If I hit a squirrel with my car, it would totally ruin my day. I mean, I was like, I'd get out of the car and I'd try to save it, you know. And
Selena De La Renta.
When you say Selena at work, Selena in real life, it's about the same. It's a preparation for my everyday life. It's about the same my preparation for MLW. The only thing is I need twice the amount of makeup and probably tighter dresses. But
Nick Aldis.
I do love Vegas, and you know what's funny is that, like, the first time I went was actually for TNA when I debuted with the Main Event Mafia. I'd never been to Vegas before then.
Wow.
I mean, in many ways, it's really the showbiz capital of America.
Yep.
You know, like, there's so much show business going on there all the time. I just love that vibe.
Vegas Bad Boys, a podcast, has over 50 interviews, and they keep on coming. Make sure you subscribe. Keep listening. Write a review about our podcast. Come to our live events. Participate in our contest. Like our social media. And most importantly, tell all your family and friends about us. We're Vegas born, and we are Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.